This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, and in studio with me are Wong Xiaoning and Philip Sea. As always, we like to start the week with a look at how markets closed on Friday.
Well, in Asia, it was very mixed bag. The Nikkei was down 1%. Hang Seng was close flat, well, marginally up 0.03%. Shanghai was down 0.7%. Down south, Singapore up 0.4%. And back home, FBM, KLCI, phew. Up 0.1%. But unfortunately, over in the United States, the Dow was down 0.9%. S&P 500 and NASDAQ also both in negative territory, down 0.8%.
And joining us for some insights into what's moving markets, we have on the line Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global in Canberra. Good morning, Kingsley. Let's start with the U.S. markets, because U.S. stocks tumbled last Friday, even after stronger than expected corporate earnings results and strong retail sales numbers. So what explains this reversal in the uptrend?
Well, yeah, the market's really uncertain about the strength and duration of this upturn. In our view, that's likely temporary, but nonetheless, the market, as you pointed out, it's been a little weak in the face of strong data. And I think that's due to the inflationary pressures and the debate about how long they're likely to last. And in our view, because they seem to be pretty much demand-led, it's more of a positive than a negative. It's the glass half full and not half empty. And in particular, what we're seeing is the biggest price increases are in raw material items like fuel and also in used cars, of all things. And further, the U.S. housing market is strong, and I think that's a positive. It's just recovered its 2008 highs more than 12 years later. So with all of that, we think it's actually positive. There are some concerns, though, that are causing these wobbles. And that's really to do with how persistent the inflation will be and the difficulty businesses are in finding labour. So they'll be watching wage growth closely.
And Kingsley, if you can you help us make sense of the bond market? Because the 10-year Treasury yields in the US are rallying, is 1.2903. And yet this is despite the backdrop of inflation and the possibility of interest rate hikes. So there's a bit of disconnect here. What is the market actually trying to tell us, though?
Well, they are bond investors, but not as we know it. I mean, this is a very different experience to what is normal in the bond market in connection with inflation. So I do think there's a lot of people scratching their heads right now as to why the bond market is rallying in the face of these price rises. In our view, it may be that the bond market has taken the view that indeed the inflation is temporary and the hawkish commentary out of the Fed may actually backfire in terms of them raising too early. I think that may be what's going on. But of course, we can't go poll the bond market to find out what they're thinking. They express their views simply through the traded prices of the bonds. And they are sending that clear signal that we shouldn't expect yields to suddenly pop up because of inflation. I think that's consistent with it being temporary, but nonetheless, it's an important puzzle and we'll all be watching it closely in combination with commodity prices.
Kingsley, can I get your views closer to your home, Australia's on and off policy with the lockdowns? What's your view in terms of sectors? Are there any sectors that you would be risk off on giving this type of uncertainty with this on and off lockdowns?
Yeah, well, the Delta variant is certainly a lot more infectious, as we've seen all around the world. So all bets are off on how quickly this Australian outbreak can be contained, particularly in Sydney. As you'll be aware, this New South Wales government went to a further stage of lockdown over the weekend, meaning they're effectively closing a lot of construction sites. And that's an example of what you're asking, really, is what sorts of sectors will be affected. We think that as far as the stocks are concerned, the shopping centre and real estate REITs, that's the real estate investment trusts, they're already a little weaker on this, and I think that makes sense. And obviously travel and entertainment sectors are weak. So there'll be some short-term weakness in banks, probably, but we don't think there's a huge risk to bad debts as a result of this. It all depends on how long this goes on. The signs out of Victoria are a little bit more encouraging than, say, New South Wales, but we just have to see how that goes. On the flip side, I think that grocers like Woolworths and liquor stores like Endeavour, they'll probably do well with people stuck at home. And with nothing else to do, Australians will likely as not eat, drink and watch Netflix. So I think there'll be a lot of online sales there once more.
And speaking of lockdowns, movement restrictions are becoming the norm here in Southeast Asia. What's your outlook for financial and banking stocks in this region? Are there any names that you feel can weather the storm we're currently in?
Well, yeah, look, it's certainly tough in Southeast Asia right now as the twin effects of the Delta strain. And some of that reported weakness we've seen, particularly in Indonesia, on the efficacy of the Sinovac vaccine. So, you know, they are concerning. But we've been living with these conditions for more than a year now. So I think that, you know, we have to give credit to people for being really reasonably robust in their ability to actually cope with these situations, as bad as it is. I think that as far as the sectors are concerned, we definitely look to pick up some of the banking stocks on any weakness. We presently own DBS in Singapore. We like that name. And we'll be looking further across Asia for financials we might add at this time, because right now that's about the only one we own, that and AIA Group up in Hong Kong, the insurer. I think there'll be buying opportunities also in the semiconductor complex, because as we've seen outbreaks in Taiwan, there's been a bit of a slowdown in production. So we'd be looking to pick those up on weakness. I think it'll be pay to be patient here, but overall positive that we'll get on top of this thing, as has been indicated in Malaysia, with the aim to achieve full coverage by October.
And Kingsley, the OPEC Plus meeting has just been concluded, so they've agreed to raise production levels. As a result, oil prices have kind of dipped slightly. So if I'm looking at WTI for August delivery, it's $71.59 US dollars a barrel. Do you think oil will remain at these levels comfortably?
Our view is yes, but it ties in pretty closely with that discussion about what's going on in the bond market. So we can't be sure about this, and we need to watch these things. But the reason why we think that oil will remain pretty robust is that the natural decline rate for oil wells across the world is about 6% per annum. So if you're not investing in new wells, then that's what's going to happen. Obviously, there is a bit of spare capacity in the OPEC complex, and that's why we don't expect oil prices to breach $100 anytime soon. But they easily could if we continue to see a lack of investment. So actually, paradoxically, in this time of climate change, we're reasonably bullish on the oil sector because we think actually people may have gotten it wrong in terms of the three-year horizon for oil. It'll be higher, we think.
So then how much attention should we then pay to demand, though?
Well, demand is the key thing, and that's the tie into the whole climate change and EV discussion. You know, the electric vehicle penetration is still low, but we have aggressive plans to phase out internal combustion engines. So it's really a race between those two effects. How quickly can you get electric vehicles into the market? And how, conversely, how quickly do petrol vehicles go out? But if you think about what's happening in places like Australia and the United States, used cars are actually going up in price. And that's because more and more people are buying vehicles because they don't want to travel public transport. So I think the fleet replacement is going to be slower than expected, even if we don't build new ICE vehicles. So look, I think that that's the question that we have to debate, and that's the area that we have to watch. And it may be a long tail for oil in this environment.
Thanks, Kingsley. As always, that was Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global, talking to us about what he thinks oil is going to look like in the coming weeks, months, years ahead.
Well, it's probably going to hover around here. He doesn't think it'll ever breach, well, unlikely to breach $100 a barrel, because at the moment, OPEC Plus seem to be getting along for the moment. For the moment is the word.
I mean, finally a compromise. And what a classic compromise in between, half-half, midway through the compromise.
I have a quote for you, and that's from the Saudi Energy Minister, Prince Abdul Aziz. He says, consensus building is an art. And obviously they got it right last night, but we don't know how long this beautiful art piece will be up. Might be taken down very soon.
That's right. I mean, but, I think everyone's giving a sigh of relief over this development. I mean, there was a lot of anxiety when OPEC Plus couldn't come to a deal a couple of weeks back. And we did speak to Saleh Yilmaz of Bloomberg Intelligence when at the height of this sort of tussle within OPEC. He was pretty confident that OPEC Plus would come to an agreement. He's been proven right. If you want to catch that conversation, you can look it up on the BFM app. The title of the podcast is No Winners from OPEC Plus Impasse.
I guess his predictions came true. I mean, Saudi and UAE are very close allies. But your question about demand is a very important question, I feel. And you have to dissect it between the short and long term. The long term demand, that's, I think, the big, big question mark. I think everyone has quite got some clarity that the short term demand is pretty good.
Yes.
But the question is the long term demand with EVs and all that coming through. That's a big question mark.
How fast do we as consumers shift to electric vehicles? Mm. And how fast that happens depends on so many things. One, of course, is government policy, right? That's a critical part. Secondly, is the price of these cars, the availability, the ease of use. Even in Malaysia, it's something that we talk about, but honestly, we haven't gotten our feet wet and in the EV space at all.
Yep.
But I think, you know, for example, China is very, very pro that. But of course, they have big government policies in terms of cutting down their carbon emissions.
That's right.
So I think if you want to see how fast we move to EV, we really have to look at government policy.
I think a government policy will come alive end of this year with COP26 in Glasgow. How that is going to be reflected. And I think that will even drive oil prices in the long-term view, possibly later then.
Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.